Hi, everyone. And let me start by thanking the organizers for giving me the great opportunity to give this talk at this very exciting conference. So today I'm going to be talking about a paper that I put out on the archive in February called Large N von Neumann Algebras and the Renormalization of Newton's Constant. And maybe a good way to start this talk is to remind everyone of a formula that I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot about this week and that we've all been thinking about a lot in the last few years, which is the quantum extremal surface formula. So what the quantum extremal surface formula does is that it expresses the entropy of a boundary state associated to some subregion of the CFT as the sum of two terms. So the first term is the area term divided by 4g Newton, area of the quantum extremal surface. And the second term is the entropy of the fields that live within that quantum extremal surface in a way, in a region that is called the entanglement wedge. And so this quantum extremal surface is found by extremizing the right-hand side. So in the case of a time reflection symmetric space-time, it's just a minimization. Otherwise, it's a bit more complicated, but we know how to do it. And the quantum extremal surface formula has, of course, proven to be very important for a lot of insights in quantum gravity, in particular, the derivation of the Page curve. So in the case of this talk, I'm going to be mainly thinking about one case, which is probably one of the simplest ones of the quantum extremal surface formula, which is the case of the calculation of black hole entropy. So in the case of a two-sided black hole, we can consider two CFTs here. So this is a Cauchy slice of space-time. And we have two CFTs, the left and the right one, on a compact space. And we entangle them in a way that there's an Einstein-Rosen bridge between them. And then the quantum extremal surface formula tells us that the entropy associated to the left CFT is just the area of the quantum extremal surface, which in that case is compact, so that we don't have to worry about it going all the way to infinity. Divided by 4g Newton, plus the entropy of the bulk fields that go across that quantum extremal surface. Okay, so that's going to be the main base case for today. And maybe a good way to start this talk is to realize that even though these entropy formulas are so fundamental and so useful in holography, when you start thinking about them, it's actually not so straightforward to properly define each of their terms. So if you look at the QES formula here, well, if we think about the bulk effective description, really we should think of this right-hand side as living in the effective description in the bulk. So a description in which we turn g Newton to zero, or maybe we've taken it perturbatively small. And almost by definition of effective field theory in that context, the entropy of the fields across sigma is infinite. So it needs to be regulated in some way. And this is in contrast with the situation on the boundary. Because on the boundary, we're really computing a UV complete quantity. This quantity here is supposed to be finite. Of course, it's very large because n is taken to be very large. But in order for this quantity to be finite, since it's proportional to n squared, we need to be taking n very large but not infinite. Or equivalently, by the holographic dictionary, we need to take g Newton very small but non-zero. So there's a bit of a discrepancy there. And in particular, we face an apparent paradox. Because this right-hand side here seems to be dependent on the choice of a cutoff that we put in the effective theory. Whereas the left-hand side is UV complete, so it cannot depend on any choice of cutoff. So how is it possible that we have a formula that seems to depend on a choice of cutoff on the right-hand side, but not on the left-hand side? Well, fortunately for us, very early in the days of black hole thermodynamics, Susskind and Uglem came up with a possible resolution of this, even before ADS-CFT was known. The idea of Susskind and Uglem is that there's another term in the formula, namely the area term. And that this area term contains a constant here, g Newton. If we allow g Newton to run in the effective theory at the same time as the entropy of the bulk fields runs, then it could be that by some mechanism, the entropy of the bulk fields and the running of g Newton exactly cancel each other. So that even though the entropy of the bulk fields depends on the cutoff, and g Newton also depends on the cutoff, the sum of these two terms is cutoff independent, which resolves the tension with the fact that the left-hand side should not depend on any choice of cutoff. So of course, there's been a lot of arguments for this conjecture based on a lot of things, like effective field theory, the gravitational path integral, and so on. But what I would like to show in this talk is that the recent discussions on the large N limit of holography, and especially on the large N von Neumann algebras that appear in this limit, as well as on holographic quantum error correction, which is by now a very well-established framework, actually allow to formulate this conjecture precisely and to prove it in the language of quantum error correcting codes. So the way I'm going to do this is that I'm going to first introduce the notion of large N von Neumann algebra, which is essentially a notion that is there to talk about the effective theory that emerges at large N in the bulk. So that's going to be the algebra that's going to describe our effective theory in the bulk. And then I'm going to introduce a way to regulate these algebras in order to obtain a finite entropy term. And finally, I'm going to use this way of regulating the algebras to provide a proof of this Susskind-Ogloff conjecture in the context of quantum error correction. So first, let's introduce the notion of large N von Neumann algebras, which I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about in this session. It has recently been realized that the discrepancy between the finite N case and the infinite N case can be traced back to a change of type of von Neumann algebra. What I mean by that is that the finite N algebras, which correspond to the boundary UV complete theories, have type 1. On the other hand, the infinite N algebras, so the ones that describe the effective theory in the bulk, or maybe the algebras of perturbation theory in 1 over N, do not have type 1. And this was pointed out by these people, Lotoisser, Liu, and later Witten. So what does it mean for an algebra to not have type 1? Well, an algebra that does not have type 1 has all of its states infinitely entangled with the rest of the system. Another way to say this is that there's so much entanglement between the subregion that is described by this algebra and its commutant that the underlying Hilbert space does not factorize, even if the algebra doesn't have a center. And then only differences of entropy in the case of type 2 or no notion of entropy at all in the case of type 3 can be defined. So these algebras need to be regulated in some way. What does it mean for our context? Well, in our context, we have the large N algebras, M left and M right, that are supposed to describe this effective theory in the bulk. And we have the finite N algebras on the boundary. So on the boundary, the theory is UV complete, and the Hilbert space factorizes between the left and the right. Then the algebras that describe the boundary theories are just the bounded operators on the left and right Hilbert spaces, and they're type 1 factors. On the contrary, the bulk is taken to be at large N. So the Hilbert space doesn't factorize in the bulk, and the algebras M left and M right do not have type 1. So there's this discrepancy there. Of course, we want to prove an entropy formula. So it's in that context that we want to think about holographic quantum error correction. And it turns out that in this context, where the bulk is at large N and the boundary is at finite N, it's a bit tricky to think about holographic quantum error correction. The reason is that the code usually, in the usual story of quantum error correction, maps the effective theory in the bulk to the finite N boundary theory. But then what happens is that if I start hitting the code very hard with operators that start breaking the effective theory, I should not trust it anymore. This was nicely formalized by Faulkner and Lee by saying that this code is going to work pointwise at large N, but not uniformly. What I mean by this is that on the one hand, if I fix an observable in the bulk, and I take N very, very, very large, I'm going to be able to reconstruct it well on the boundary. But the opposite is not true. If I fix N on the boundary, I'm always going to be able to find observables in the effective field theory that break the code. So it's in this context of a code that works pointwise at large N, but not uniformly, that we want to prove an entropy formula. So we call this entropy formula. It expresses this UV finite quantity on the left in terms of these two terms. And from what we said, you know, we cannot associate this bulk entropy term to the full large N algebra. The reason being that in this full large N algebra, it doesn't have type 1, so entropy is divergent. Another way to say this is that if we want to prove this formula in the language of error correction, the full large N algebra cannot be considered as a code subspace to prove this formula, because it's unregulated. So what should we do instead? Well, we should regulate it. And the way that I'm going to regulate it today is by singling out some small subalgebras of this large N algebra, and only considering these small subalgebras as my code subspace. And of course, now the question is, well, how do we pick these small subalgebras? So I'm going to propose a way to do this in a way that still allows us to talk about quantum error correction through something that I call code subspace renormalization. So what does a good regulated subalgebra look like? Well, the first thing is that we want this regulated subalgebra to match the bulk entropy term in the large N limit. And in particular, this bulk entropy term should be finite. And by what we've said, in order to hope for a finite entropy, that means that this regulated algebra must have type 1. So at least if we ask for it to not have a center, which is the case I'm going to be focusing on today, it should be either finite dimensional or isomorphic to bounded operators on some separable Hilbert space. And the good thing with type 1 algebras is that once we've singled out this small type 1 algebra inside the large N algebra, we can use a lot of tools that we like in quantum information, like Schmidt decompositions and von Neumann entropy, just in the usual way. So, you know, we could say, okay, this is good. All we need to do is find a type 1 subalgebra inside our unregulated algebra, and that should be fine. We should be able to apply quantum error correction to that. Well, it turns out this is not quite enough. And the reason is that we want to prove an entropy formula in the end. And in holography, all known proofs of entropy formulas that are based on quantum error correction require an assumption of complementary recovery. So whatever way we find to regulate this large N algebra, we should find a way that respects this structure of complementarity. More precisely, we want something like this. We have the unregulated algebras, M left and M right, that act on the unregulated Hilbert space H. And we want to find a way to project these unregulated algebras onto regulated algebras, indexed by some energy scale lambda, that act on the regulated Hilbert space H lambda, and that are commutants of each other on this regulated Hilbert space. So how can we do this? How can we project these large N algebras onto regulated algebras in a way that respects the commutant structure? Well, this is a non-trivial constraint. But fortunately for us, in 1972, so we're just a bit late, Takizaki actually solved this problem. And what Takizaki tells us is that in order for this commutant structure to be compatible, this question mark map here should be something called a conditional expectation. And this Hilbert space here, H lambda of regulated states, should be the Hilbert space of invariant states under this conditional expectation. So that's a bit of a mouthful, so let's try to unpack this statement. The map here, E lambda, should be thought of as a projection map onto this regulated subalgebra. And it's called a conditional expectation. So it satisfies this axiom, which essentially tells you that it's a good notion of projection at the level of von Neumann algebras. And then the states in this regulated Hilbert space here should satisfy the following identity. They should satisfy that if I take an observable in my unregulated subalgebra, and I take its expectation value against the state, it should be the same as the expectation value against the state once I've applied the projection. So if we have this invariance condition and these conditional expectations, then Takizaki tells us that this works. On this regulated Hilbert space of states that satisfy this identity, M lambda left and M lambda right are commutants of each other in a way that is compatible with the commutant structure of the unregulated algebras. So the interpretation of this E lambda is that it integrates out some entanglement in a way that is compatible with complementary recovery. Okay, so far this looks a bit abstract, and actually, in general, in the theory of von Neumann algebras, conditional expectations are a bit of a tricky business. They're at the base of a lot of very deep results. But for today, it's going to turn out that these conditional expectations are going to take a very simple form. And the reason is because we're projecting onto type 1 factors. And it turns out that when you're projecting onto a type 1 factor, conditional expectations can be written down way more explicitly. More precisely, you know, we have this unregulated algebra M left that acts on the Hilbert space, which is unregulated, and then we have this type 1 subfactor of this unregulated algebra M left. It turns out that in this case, you can show that the inclusion tensor factorizes, in the sense that you have this regulated algebra that tensor factorizes with its commutant. And this tensor factorization actually simplifies a great deal the form of conditional expectations. Because in that case, you can show that any conditional expectation from the unregulated algebra to the regulated algebra, so any projection map, is going to take this form. It's going to take an observable that has a low energy part and a high energy part. It's going to eat the high energy part by applying some reference state to it. And it's going to leave us with a low energy part. And then the Hilbert space of invariant states under this conditional expectation, so the Hilbert space of regulated states that we want, is just whatever we want in the low energy part and the reference state in the high energy part. So the conditional expectation integrates out the degrees of freedom in this high energy part by just applying this reference state. This formula makes it very clear that you're integrating out something. This leads us to a framework in which it's possible to renormalize the code subspace in a way that is compatible with the commutant structure. Essentially, what you do is that you just start with the unregulated algebras that act on the unregulated Hilbert space, and you successively apply the conditional expectations, and you single out Hilbert spaces of states that are invariant under these conditional expectations so that the commutant structures are compatible. And then you ask that these regulated algebras here are type 1 so that they can carry a finite amount of entropy. It is with this framework of renormalization, so you should really think of these conditional expectations now as implementing the RG flow, that I'm going to be trying to prove this Susskind-Ogloff conjecture in the language of approximate quantum error correction. So okay, now what we have is a good way, a consistent way, of renormalizing the code subspace. So, but of course we want to go back to the code. So recall that we have this encoding map that goes from this large n Hilbert space here that doesn't factorize between the left and the right to the finite n Hilbert space that tensor factorizes between the left and the right. And as we said, you know, good properties for this map, like things like closeness to isometry or good reconstruction properties, can only be formulated pointwise and not uniformly. So the idea here is going to be to ask for stronger reconstruction properties, but only for the renormalized subalgebras, and to prove an entropy formula that just sees these renormalized subalgebras as the bulk subalgebras. So how do we do this? Well, now that we have this framework, it's actually pretty simple. We just consider a smaller code. So we have these bulk algebras that are unregulated and that are commutants of each other, and we just project them onto the regulated subalgebras through this conditional expectation here. And actually, because these things are type 1 and they don't have a center, you can show that the code subspace, once you've done this projection, factorizes between the left and the right, because you've integrated out all the divergent entanglement. So that now you really have a map that maps you between a regulated code subspace between the left and the right to the full UV complete theory. And it is for this map that I'm going to be proving an approximate entropy formula. Okay, so of course, so far, you know, all we did was to be able to define a good notion of bulk entropy term that is well defined. But there is another ingredient in this entropy formula, which is the area term. So what is a good notion of an area term? Well, when we have an approximate code. Well, it turns out that this was nicely defined by Akers and Pennington. I'm just going to follow their approach here. So the idea is to consider this map that goes from this regulated algebra to the full UV complete Hilbert spaces, and then to define something called the Choi-Jamiolkowski state. So what the Choi-Jamiolkowski state does is that it takes all the degrees of freedom in the regulated Hilbert space on the left and maximally entangles them with the reference system. All the degrees of freedom in the regulated Hilbert space on the right and maximally entangles them with the reference system. And then it applies the bulk to boundary map. So why is this a good choice? Well, the idea is that if you take all these degrees of freedom and maximally entangle them with something else, they're going to be too busy being entangled to something else to be entangled to each other. So that once you apply the bulk to boundary map, the code subspace entropy contribution of the state should be zero, and the state should only give you an area contribution. So that makes it a good idea to define the area associated to this subdivision as just the entropy of this Choi-Jamiolkowski state restricted to the left. And that's the definition I'm going to be using here. An important point about this definition is that once you fix the regulated code subspace, there's only one value of area. And the reason is just because the Choi-Jamiolkowski state is uniquely defined. You know the code subspace, you know the CJ state, you know the value of the area. So that doesn't change. But on the other hand, this value of the area does depend on something else, which is the choice of renormalized code subspace. So if you change the choice of code subspace, if you change the energy scale, then what's going to happen is that, for example, if I increase the energy scale, I'm going to disentangle more and more modes in the bulk in the Choi-Jamiolkowski state, so that the corresponding entropy of this state is going to decrease. So the larger the renormalized code subspace, the smaller the area term with this definition. And that's going to be, of course, an important point. OK, so using this definition, you know, you can just follow the technology of Akers and Pennington, and you can show that if you have good reconstruction properties. So here I said that I had a non-perturbative error. I actually just need a few orders in 1 over n. Then you get this asymptotic formula. So you get that the entropy of the boundary state asymptotes to the area term associated to your regulating scale plus the entropy of the bulk state associated to your regulating scale. And this is good. This is an entropy formula. But of course, the crucial point is that this formula is valid for any choice of cutoff, as long as, say, it doesn't depend too much on n so that we can still make good reconstruction properties. In particular, if I choose a cutoff mu, which is smaller than my cutoff lambda, Then I have an entropy formula that is valid both for the cutoff mu and for the cutoff lambda. And you can show that if you take a state psi in the regulated Hilbert space associated to the scale lambda, to the scale mu, then actually its entropy is gonna factor out in the bulk. So you're gonna be able to write it as a contribution that comes from the energy scale mu, and a contribution that comes from whatever is at energy scale lambda, but not at energy scale mu. And then if you just re-inject this formula into here, what you obtain is this statement, that the area associated to the scale mu asymptotes as n goes to infinity to the area associated to the scale lambda plus the entropy of whatever is in scale lambda, but not in scale mu. So that's exactly the analog of the statement of Safkan and Uglum in the language of quantum error correction at large n. Okay, so that's the result. And the idea, though, is that this proof that is based on quantum error correction actually maybe provides a bit of a reinterpretation of the Safkan-Uglum conjecture in a perhaps a bit modern language, more modern language. Namely, you can ask, you know, what makes this proof work? Well, the idea is that the bigger the code subspace, the smaller the entropy of this Troy-Gia-Mielkowski state is going to be, as we said. But of course, there's nothing mystical to this statement. The only reason why this is true is that because the missing entropy that we were previously counting as part of the entropy of the Troy-Gia-Mielkowski states is now counted as part of the code subspace entropy. Another way to say this is that there is some entropy in the code that can be counted either as bulk entropy or as geometry. And whether it is one or the other, of course, just amounts to making this choice of renormalization scale in the bulk, which is completely unphysical. It's just a choice of scheme. So this is the paradigm of ER equals EPR that tells us that in the semi-classical limit, there should be no physical distinction between entanglement and geometry in gravity. Okay, so as a recap, there is an algebraic way to regulate a von Neumann algebra with divergent entropy while preserving the structure that we want to preserve, which is the structure of complementarity. And the way to do this is through these conditional expectations and this language of code subspace renormalization. And then by restricting the holographic codes to the regulated subalgebras, one can actually prove an asymptotic approximate entropy formula. And the idea with this formula is that as the cutoff runs in the bulk entropy gets repackaged into the area term. And of course, this seems to suggest that there is a close connection between ER equals EPR and renormalization. And actually, let me end this talk by saying that I think there's various hints in the literature that this connection between the idea of ER equals EPR and the idea of renormalization might not be limited to entropy formulas at all. It might be a way more general feature of quantum gravity. And I think it's an interesting question to ask what this idea, this general idea that ER equals EPR and renormalization are related, could tell us about full quantum gravity. Thank you so much for your attention.
For a very nice talk. Questions? What?
Yeah, so this regularization procedure you propose, I found it a little abstract to me. So I'm asking, do you have some regularization procedures, dimensional regularization, various ones that people have proposed. Does it
obey
your constraint or not?
Does it, sorry?
Yeah. The first part of the talk where you talk about the regularization procedure, I can apply it just to the bulk theory, forgetting about the boundary theory.
Yeah.
It has some special properties.
Yes.
I'm just asking the usual regularization procedure, regularization, polyvirus, whatever.
Yeah. I think it's not clear yet. I do think that the properties are probably an idealization. So I think the idea is that these properties of like projecting onto a code subspace and respecting the commutant structure, essentially, should probably be really difficult if you like hand me a large n theory and I have to do that, then it's probably very difficult to single out these subalgebras explicitly.
I don't think you're a large n theory, I just give you a bulk theory.
Yeah.
Is it possible to find?
Yeah, so I think this is not exactly clear yet, but that there should be a way to at least find an approximate version of that. I think there's some hints in the literature.
This is a follow-up on that discussion. Use these
Region. Does that give you the conditional expectation of that property?
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. So the split property would be one way to do that. You would have a few other things to worry about, namely the fact that if you really want to use these regulated Hilbert spaces like that, you need the states in them to be invariant under the conditional expectation. And that's a bit of a strong thing. So, but the idea is that even if your states are not exactly invariant under these conditional expectations, there should probably be a way to approximate them by states that are invariant under conditional expectations. But probably, yeah, starting with a split property and like type one subfactors would be a good way to start.
Yeah. Also, holography, where what's happening here is that you have some RT surface, like something like, and we think of the areas coming from this way. But you can also just cut all the links or some subset of the links, all the endpoints logical.
Yep.
But it's to the bulk instead of. And then you feed in EPR pairs, and of course, the answer, but you have to. And it's exactly this mechanism.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a question from Kareem Hassan. And so Kareem, can you unmute? Maybe turn your video on to ask your question.
About according to ER equals EBR, what is the solution of Bell's inequality?
Sorry, I think I didn't hear the question. Bell's inequality?
Yes, Bell's inequality.
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question. Yeah, maybe we can talk about this more after. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, maybe you can ask online. There's one other online question.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Leo Chapo.
I just want to ask, what is the role of Newton's constants? So you say you have the split, and you see the renormalization, but like at large n, if you have the bulk at large n, the Newton's constant would vanish, right? So how do we see that there?
So is the question, like, if I take large N, why does Newton's constant vanish?
No, how do you see it in your framework that it does vanish?
Oh, how do I see it in my framework that it does vanish? Well, I guess in my framework, it corresponds to the statement that the type of the von Neumann algebra becomes not one.
OK. Thanks.
I would have thought that these ML lambda algebras had one to not factors. Do you agree with that? And if so, do you think?
Right. That's a good question. So, sorry? Oh, yeah, so the question was, Chris was asking about the case where the algebras are not factors and where you have a center for the algebras. So I think it does extend. I mean, the thing is, it's always like you could always choose to take algebras that are factors and just say that, you know, the area term is unique for these algebras. What would definitely change in the case of things that are not factors is that you would have several Chojia-Minkowski states that would correspond to the different code subspaces, and then you would have different area terms coming from these. That being said, I don't see any obstacle to doing that, apart from the fact that I think in your paper you had like an issue about minimality when you had centers. So that would be maybe something to worry about, but if you don't worry about minimality, I think you're fine, yeah. No, I think there is a normal conditional expectation onto any type 1 subalgebra.
From type 3?
Yeah, for example, yeah. Yeah, so the statement is about normality of conditional expectations. I agree. Everything here should be said with the word normal, but there definitely exists some normal conditional expectations onto type 1 subfactors for any type. This is proved in a nice book by Stratila. We can talk about it more.
Okay, thanks for the great talk. Thanks for the questions.